Uri Geller and you know each other. You were relayed many years ago just a tremendous story about when you first met Geller. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that again, Edgar?
Well, there's a whole host of stories around the work with Geller. Let's just first point out that in spite of all things to the contrary, he is not a hoaxer or magician either, although he, and I won't say he doesn't have the capability to be a magician, but most of the things he does are real.
Right.
And that's been demonstrated over and over again. I have quite a number of artifacts from those days, and it's very hard to, unless you have personally seen it and experienced all of this, it's very hard to believe somebody else's words on it. But, and I recognize that. But not only have I had some very personal things, which I'll explain very quickly here in just a second.
Sure.
But we've done enough laboratory work under very well-controlled conditions, not only with Geller, but although he's kind of a champion at it, he's one of the best, with others also who have we've experienced this with. And where it really comes down to the most important practical application of all of this is it leads to understanding how mind and intentionality creates positive physical results or creates physical results. And that is something important for us to know about ourselves, about the way the universe is put together, about the way we're put together. That's what comes out of it. And in particularly in the ability to create ourselves a better, healthy, more healthy climate to heal ourselves, that's where we really go with that. Now, stage tricks or nice tricks like Uri Geller can do to show this as real, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not where it's going. Where it's going is the use of it in our daily lives to recognize that when you learn how to do and manage these types of faculties, mental faculties, that is, I believe, an evolving characteristic of our species that we can learn to use much better to help ourselves.
Tell us about the story of, was it a tie clasp?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Well, I had challenged Uri, if some of you may know, I had challenged Uri to bring back a camera I had on the moon and still up there on the Met that's sitting on the lunar surface.
Did you forget it or what?
No. No, it was a part of...
you just took
it. Actually, it's a part of dumping our excess equipment to reduce the weight. What I did forget and didn't get was the magazine off of it before. that wasn't so good. But anyhow, Uri had been saying how he was very good at teleportation. And I said, we were trying to do something else in the lab, and I was a little frustrated. I said, well, come on, if you're so good at teleportation, bring back the camera that's left on the moon. It's got a serial number, et cetera, and everybody will know about it. It's you'll be famous. Well, that didn't happen because it was still attached to a very heavy piece of equipment. About a day or so later at the SRI cafeteria where we were working, had a group of us sitting around the table, and we were about finished with our lunch and going back to work, and Uri wanted some ice cream. And so he ordered some ice cream. It was brought to him in a metal dish. Took a couple of bites, and all of a sudden cried out in pain. Blood came from his mouth.
Oh, my.
And he took out a glob of something out of his mouth, and I washed it off in my water glass and said, oh, my heavens, it looks like a little emblem, a miniature hunting arrow with a ram's head on it. And I said, gentlemen, this looks like an emblem off of a tie pin I had that I lost on Apollo 16 before I ever met Uri Geller.
Jeez.
And so we chortled about, okay, what's the probability of something Ed Mitchell lost a couple of years ago showing up in Uri Geller's ice cream when we're doing the experiments in psychokinesis and teleportation.
And he would have had no idea that you lost this.
No. Not that I know of, before I ever met him, and I hadn't thought about it.
Yeah.
So we went on about our business back into the lab, and I was in the inner lab starting to set up for the afternoon while the rest of them are chatting outside in the anteroom, and suddenly I heard a plink on the tile floor outside, poked my head to see what was going on, just in time to see Dr. Harold Puthoff pick up something off the floor. And he said, "What's this?" and handed it to me. And it was the silver tie pin portion of that tie pin.
So you had the whole thing now?
Now we had the whole thing. The last time I had seen it, it was in one piece, but here it was in two pieces. And I pointed that out. I said, "Well, this was in the same jewelry box that I had lost before." And then so we laughed about that and went on to work. And see, this isn't science. This is anecdotal stuff. And so Puthoff and I walked into the inner lab and continued the work before we started getting set up before we really started the afternoon's work. And then while we were alone in the room, right between us, about shoulder length, we both caught something out of the corner of our eye dropping to the floor. I picked it up this time, and it turned out to be another tie pin, a tie tack. It was a put off. Said, "Well, what's that?" And I said, "Well, it looks like a pearl tie tack that my brother had given to me when he was in Okinawa on duty, or in Japan on duty a few years before for Christmas." And he said, "How do you know?" And I said, "Well, I don't know anything for sure. But note that it is a pearl stick pin or tie pin with a silver base and a brass clutch back." I said, "Well, the one my brother gave me had a silver clutch back, but I lost that one and put a brass clutch back on from my Navy wing. And this is one with a pearl stick pin with a silver shank and a brass clutch back." And it was in the same jewel box with these other two pieces that we just recovered.
That's great.
So that's the story. And I still have those there.
That is
pretty
great.
Amazing.